Yikes. Which will kill you.
No, thank you.
Demons don't give a shit about locks.
A little bit grim.
Hi. Hello. How are you?
I am doing very well. How are you?
I'm pretty great.
We got a logo today.
We did get a logo today.
Ooh. My heart is beating so fast. Dan Church, shout out. Thank you so much.
We love him.
You're a magic worker of all kinds of things.
So patient with all of our chaos.
Yes. He took our chaos and made it something
art
that represented us very well. So super, super grateful to him for doing that. And thank you very much. How's your day?
Well, it's Friday.
It is Friday. And you're leaving tomorrow for a very long vacation.
I am. And I gotta tell you, I'm having real anxious sweats about it.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's gonna be fine.
It's very first world problems for me to be anxious about vacation, but like, I am.
That's okay. Yeah. Did you get Dramamine?
I got a prescription strength Dramamine patch.
Okay, you have to let me know how that goes because I'm going on almost the exact same vacation you are in 2 weeks after you get home.
I love that.
So I need to know what I need to do to prepare myself for being on a big ass boat for a long extended period of time because I went on a cruise when I was like 14 and it was like Gilligan's Island style where we were on a that was supposed to be like a 4-hour cruise.
4-hour tour.
Right. And I got so sick that I was horizontal the entire trip to the Bahamas. Like, they didn't even assign us rooms because the trip was going to be so short.
Oh, God.
And I, like...
Where'd you sail from?
Florida.
Oh, I feel like that's a long... Okay.
I mean, it was about 4 hours.
Again, I don't know how big oceans are.
We figured this out.
Okay.
Yeah, it was horrible. I found an empty cabin that happened to be unlocked. Like, 14-year-old Taylor was like, I don't care. I'm going in here. So I slept in a vacant room and nobody could find me.
Great. Well, my anxiety feels better.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. But it was a little boat. It was not a cruise ship.
It'll be fine.
It will be fine. I've heard amazing things about the size of a boat you're going to be on, so...
I mean, there's like 4 bars, so how bad can it be?
Truly.
So we're going to talk about crime.
Crime today.
A murder most foul.
Yes.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
I do have a murder for you. I just crammed this in so fast, like 2 hours ago, so it is fresh.
Oh.
In my head.
The old college strategy,
oh,
I see.
Yes. See, I'm going to present you with this report.
That I myself have learned
within the last 6 hours. So yeah, it's going to go really well. I owe Wikipedia so much gratitude right now.
I just would really like to go on record and say, Wikipedia is an absolutely fine resource.
Absolutely. Your college professors are assholes because they're telling you that you can't go to Wikipedia.
Go to Wikipedia.
Go. At least start there because yeah. They've got sources.
Yeah.
And then you can go to the other sources. So I did do
source
that.
Source the source.
Yeah. I did double check some things. Mm-hmm. So I also went to the Sword and Scale website and got some information from them as well. So shout out to both of those lovely websites. If you have $5, go onto Wikipedia. Please donate to them. They desperately need it. And we need to have this information.
I have literally never donated to Wikipedia in my life.
I have donated probably 3 times, and it's always on my phone. Like, and I'm always in the bathtub, like, wondering about something stupid. And then I'm on Wikipedia, and they're like, please donate $2. And I was like, okay, like, fine. Give me my information. I feel bad, like, stealing all of this knowledge.
Theft doesn't exist on the internet, does it?
You can't steal knowledge, right?
That's like a very ethical question. I just want to hear about murder.
Okay, great. So, picture it. It's 1998.
Ooh, a good year.
Yep. We're awkward.
Mm-hmm. Boy and how.
Yep. I have long limbs. Knobby knees and elbows.
Do you mean like now or then?
Then. Okay. I'm not that tall now. I think I grew my entire height by the time I was like 9, 8 or 9.
What a lanky 9-year-old.
Oh, it was awful. I was like, for 6 months, I was taller than all the boys in my class. Mm-hmm. They caught up pretty quickly, but it was an awkward time. I hadn't really learned social skills yet, and my hair was so frizzy. And Hermione Granger hadn't been popularized yet. So I was a lone wolf struggling by myself.
Bless you.
Okay, so it's 1990.
Long limb bookworm Taylor.
Yeah, not a great look. Now we're going to go, it's 1998, it's December.
I like how that's a whole, I'm so sorry. That's just the whole bullet point on your notes.
It's 1998.
It's 1998.
Listen, an hour and a half ago, I was like, I ain't got time for full bullet points.
Okay.
Right. As you go four bullet points down, it's I have an entire paragraph.
Okay.
So it started off short.
Okay. It's 1998.
Yeah. It's December. We're at Yale University.
Ooh, smart kid school.
Yeah, smart kids. A smart kid named Suzanne Jovan is 21. She's a senior at Yale. She's a political science and international studies major. Mm. So this girl is smart. Love she knows that. What's happening. She was also a American-born German. Her parents were American, and they had her and raised her in Germany.
Ah, sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Sprechen.
What? Right on.
Keep going. Thanks.
Raised in Germany. I'll give you that.
Thanks. So she was raised in Germany, and then they came here when she was an adolescent. So she spoke fluent German.
Love that for her.
Yeah. So one key point of this story is that the night in question is December 4th. She is finishing up her studies. She's getting ready to go on fall break.
Mm-hmm.
She sends an email to an unknown someone. And she sends this email in German,
okay,
saying that she's going to leave out some study materials for this person, like in the corridor or in the hallway mm-hmm. of her apartment, and gave this person the code to get into the, like, building.
Sure.
But not her house, like, just in case she wasn't there.
Okay.
But we're going to come back to that. She was walking around that evening. She was walking back from returning her keys to the car she had borrowed from the university's police communication center. So it's like you can borrow cars from that, like, police communication center.
Rent a car.
They skimmed over that bullet point, like it didn't really happen. And I was like, but wait, what?
More details required.
We don't have that kind of stuff here. So I was like, wait, I'm so confused. Anyway, so it's like 9 o'clock at night when that is happening.
Okay.
She is seen by another student between 9:25 and 9:30. That student says they had a maybe 2 to 3 minute conversation just about studies, things in general. At 9:55, so 25 to 30 minutes later, a passerby dialed 911 to report a woman bleeding at the corner of Edgehill Road and East Rock Road.
Why does that sound like something a straight white male called about a woman on her period?
Oh, my God.
She's standing on the street, and she's just bleeding.
She's bleeding everywhere. Please make it stop.
Jesus. Okay, go on.
Okay. So she is almost 2 miles from Yale campus, and that was, like, she's 2 miles from the last time she was seen alive.
Oh.
But it's impossible for her to have gotten 2 miles away.
In that short of a time.
In that short of a time.
Sure.
So the police arrived at 9:58. They found Suzanne fatally stabbed 17 times in the back and her head, and her neck had been, her throat had been slit.
Yikes.
Lots of yikes.
Oh my God, that poor woman.
So a lot of shit happened in 25 minutes.
How? Oh, you're going to tell
Great questions.
Me. Okay, go on.
So she was lying on her stomach. Her feet were in the road. Her body was on the grassy area between the road and the sidewalk. She was fully clothed, was wearing her watch, her earrings. She had a crumpled dollar bill in her back pocket. Her wallet was later found to be still in her room. She was officially pronounced dead at 10:26 at the Yale New Haven Hospital.
Jesus.
All right. So there are some key pieces of evidence here. The tip of the knife was found lodged in her skull.
Mm.
So we have a piece of the murder weapon just off the whole thing.
Okay.
There were DNA scrapings underneath her fingernails on her left hand.
We love a fighter. Good for
her. Yeah,
fight for your goddamn life.
Yeah, for real. One of the things that just gets me is, like, this is in public, and Yale is a populated place. Nobody saw something? Nobody saw anybody stabbing a 21-year-old woman at 9:30 at night?
It's not like stabbing is a subtle act of murder.
And it's not quick. She was stabbed 17 times.
That's so many. I don't do anything 17 times.
No. So There was also a water bottle found near the scene that had Suzanne's fingerprints on it, and it also had a partial fingerprint of someone that did not belong to her. So there was a, like, gas station not far from her dorm, which is the only place that had this, like, specific kind of water bottle. I think it was, like, Fresca. But nobody mentioned this in, like, anything that I found, but I thought, you know, like, it was probably the poor the person, like, stalking it. Like, stalking, like,
oh, the like water in putting it, or, the water in the fridge.
Yeah, not, like, lurking.
I'm after this bottle of water.
Right. Other observations were made about the scene.
Okay.
There was a tan or brown van stopped in the roadway facing east, immediately adjacent to where Suzanne was found. There was a man in his 20s or 30s with the athletic build, well-groomed hair, a chiseled face, dark pants, a loose-fitting greenish jacket.
Was he a Calvin Klein model? Who was this?
Well, he was running like his life depended on it, away from the scene.
Oh, dressed all fancy and looking good?
I guess.
What are you doing out here, double-cheeked up at a murder scene?
Yep, I don't know. So he was running away from the direction where Suzanne was killed.
Well,
and bad then look. We have this mysterious, nondescript someone who Suzanne mentioned in an email she sent less than an hour before she was stabbed, which is that email she sent in German. I'm not sure. I didn't figure out why that was so imperative to the case, but everywhere I looked, like, mentioned that she wrote this email in German. So I don't know if that was super out of the ordinary for her, or if maybe her, whoever she was writing this email to, wasn't, didn't have a good English language comprehension. So we don't know why she wrote that email in German.
I know culturally a lot of times when people are bilingual, especially, I know this in the context of, like, my German classes at college, but, like, if you're multilingual, you will switch your language depending on the subject matter that you're discussing.
Oh, okay.
So if it's, like, something more casual, you would speak it in, like, your native tongue, or if it was something more formal or whatever, you would switch to different languages depending on the context.
Interesting.
So, I don't have enough detail to know.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's more than anybody online was able to tell me. Well, thanks, Wikipedia.
Thanks, community college.
Yeah. So one weird thing that I found was that the police did not release this information right away.
Oh.
Okay. So this crime happened in 1998. The murder weapon, so the fact that they found, like, a piece of the murder weapon in her skull was not released to the public until March of 2000.
Okay.
The fact that there was a brown van there was not released until March of 2001. The fact that there was a water bottle with someone else's fingerprint on it was released in April of 2001. The fingernail DNA wasn't released until October of 2001. And the man running away, the chiseled
Calvin Klein model.
Calvin Klein model was not released until June of 2008.
What?
2008! Why?
Right.
So, and the woman came forward saying that she saw this man, like, 4 days after the murder happened.
Oh.
So they had this information right away. It wasn't like 2008 came around and some lady was like, oh, by the way, I, like, totally saw this dude who popped out of a Calvin Klein, like, magazine.
I just really remembered this, like, detail 10 years ago about this hot guy running.
Yeah. So just some weird things.
String of events.
I want to think and hope that they had their reasons for this, but
I mean, I know a lot of times, like, police won't release all the details of a case because a lot of times, like, when they interview or interrogate the perpetrator, they can self-incriminate themselves by mentioning details that haven't been released to the press.
Right.
So, but I don't know. I don't know about all that.
I don't know.
We should have put a disclaimer in about my cat, Donut, who runs around and meows.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you listen to the first episode, you hear him. He has commentary. He needs to make his opinion known.
Right. And he really loves to try to get in my lap, but he wants to come over my shoulders to do that.
And hit the mic.
So, like, at the end of our last episode, I'm laughing because Donut has his, like, claws in my sweatshirt. And he's, like, pulling at the back of my sweatshirt through the chair. So Donut will occasionally make himself known. Okay. So the ME declared that the knife was a 4 to 5 inch non-serrated carbon steel knife. I don't know what any of that means. I just know that
sounds like it'd make a bad cheese knife.
Yeah. Not great.
No. Oh, cheese. Oh, I have some, Parmigiano Reggiano in the fridge.
Oh, that's my favorite. Okay. They know that she must have gotten into a car either voluntarily or forcibly because she was nearly 2 miles away. So we already talked about, like, she
She didn't time travel.
She didn't run.
Right.
So Suzanne wrote that email. I have that as another bullet point, but we've covered that. So let's get down into some suspects.
Ooh, I love.
Suspicious. So.
Sounds suspicious.
This poor man that I'm about to tell you about.
Is it the Calvin Klein model?
It is not.
Oh.
This man is Suzanne's advisor.
Ooh. Like collegiate advisor?
Yes.
Okay.
He was a suspect from, like, day one.
Okay.
This man's name is James Vandeveld.
Ooh.
And all I can think of is James Vanderbeek.
Yep.
So I just want everybody to picture him as Dawson. Okay, go. So Dawson Leary was named as publicly as a suspect, although they had literally nothing to, tie him to this crime.
They're just throwing out a name.
Zero things to tie him to this crime.
They're like, ah, pick a suspect.
Pick a suspect? Any suspect. So James is going to be like kind of a character the rest of this.
Okay.
And we just need to remember that this man is not guilty. Okay.
How do we know though?
I will tell you.
Oh, okay.
Just like
I'll just hang in there.
I will protect James.
Okay. That's, you just want him to be James Vanderbeek. That's,
I mean, he made some like good contributions to the case in the following years, and like to this day is still trying to figure out what happened. So he was publicly named as a suspect. Like, the police chief sat up on a podium and was like,
this guy,
James Dawson Vandeveld, is our suspect. And everybody's like, but why? And they're like, we just don't like him. So.
That's the kind of reasoning I can get behind.
I mean, honestly, I just hope that this police chief was like, I'm just going to trust my gut on this one. And everybody was like, okay. So in 1999, so right after this crime had been committed, Yale, under the guidance of the dean, Richard H. Broadhead.
Ugh.
Yeah, we don't like Richard.
These are rich people names.
I mean, yeah. I can see dollar signs like after their names. Mm-hmm. Chose to cancel Vandeveld's spring 1990 classes, citing his presence as a major distraction to students and thus damaging his reputation and academic career forever.
Well, I mean, he was named as the number one suspect in the murder of a student. So I can like understand why the dean would be like, we're going to cut that semester out, bud.
Yeah. Yale never apologized.
Well, since when do rich people apologize?
True, but still, poor James deserved better. So in 2000, Vandeveld and Suzanne's family and her friends all encouraged Yale to hire their own private investigators to look into the case. They finally did, begrudgingly.
Wow.
After public shaming.
They're like, nah, fine.
Yeah. They're like, please leave us alone.
You're so obsessed with knowing who murdered this girl.
Let it go. So they hired Andrew Rosenweg, a former chief investigator for the New York District Attorney's Office, and Patrick Harnett, a former commanding officer of the New York Police Department's Major Crime Squad.
That sounds like the love interest in like a shitty romance novel.
Mm, that's a romance novel I'd read, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mark it on my Goodreads.
Spice her day up.
Yale. Yale has not made its investigation public, nor explained its secrecy. So they're not releasing any information that
Then what's the point of hiring a... fucking Yale.
I think Yale's hiding something.
This is why
Yale's always hiding stuff. Well, they got secret societies and shit.
Fucking Ivy League.
The New Haven Police Department, which is the police department for Yale, contacted the Navy a few years later. And the Navy was James Vandeveld's... employer at that point.
Oh, he left Yale and got hired by the whole ass Navy?
The whole ass Navy.
All right.
Except not if Yale has anything to say about it, because they were like, hey, yo, dudes, did you know that, like, he's named public, like, he's our main suspect in this murder a few years ago?
Don't you think the Navy would fucking know? It's the Navy.
Right. So the Navy was like, interesting. Okay. They do their own investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Navy is like,
he didn't do it.
He didn't do it. We're going to keep him. But thanks for bringing that to our attention.
10-4.
10-4, good buddy. So annoying that this guy is like, he's like just trying to like live his dang old life.
You're like really obsessed with this dude.
I'm just sad for him. he's probably like trying to have like a family and stuff. Like he was literally like
no way.
Wrong place, wrong. He wasn't even in a place at a time. He like literally knew this girl.
What if he's like laying awake in bed somewhere right now, like, I committed the perfect crime.
Okay, but the DNA underneath her fingertips did not match him. The fingerprint on that water bottle did not match him.
Who did it match?
Nobody! They can't figure it out!
Does the DNA from the fingerprint in the skin? Wait, can you DNA like that? Oh, I didn't think so.
No.
I studied
I don't think so.
Music. I don't know science.
So.
Okay, frustrating.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Wait, so how often, like, if the police, I'm really, involved in this now.
I understand.
So how often do, like, the police from these cold cases rerun old DNA, like, again, new perpetrators and, like, bad guys come and get put in jail or, like, for anything, they DNA test you and fingerprint you. So, like, how often are we running this in our?
Not often.
Love that.
Due to like financial restrictions and then like just not interested in cases anymore. So unless people are beating down police's doors, like we need to figure out this case, it just sits in a box.
Got it. So you're
doing
somebody
takes interest.
You're doing a public service right now.
Yes.
Somebody go write Yale.
Well, we'll get there.
Okay.
So in the Navy is like, yeah, bro, thanks. We're gonna let him keep his job and his security clearance. So they didn't take anything away from him. So they did not suspect him in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
So.
Well, if the Navy says so.
I'm not going to get into it.
I trust the Navy. I love good boat guys.
I love my brother.
Yeah. He's a good boat guy.
Never mind. We're not going to do it. Right. Okay. So.
Did you know that they have 13 buttons on their pants?
No, sorry. I did not.
I just learned it on the internet. Okay, keep going.
I'm glad that the internet told you that random fact.
Sorry, continue. I'll quit interrupting you. Oh, I promise.
Let me get through this bullet point.
Okay, go.
I lost my place. Okay, so after that happened, Vandeveld undertook a letter writing campaign urging the Connecticut State Cold Case Unit to take over the case. When the chief state's attorney's office refused, Vandeveld began pressing the police to undertake additional state-of-the-art forensic tests on the evidence. So in September of 2006, Suzanne's case was classified a cold case again and moved to Connecticut. Oh, my God. Cool.
Connecticut-ba-ba-doop-a-da.
Yep, that one. Connecticut's cold case unit. However, the case was never added to the cold case unit website, nor were there any mention of the reward being offered, and there was a reward. They fucking know something. Okay. Prompting Vandeveld once again to write letters of complaint. On November 29th, 2007, Assistant State Attorney James Clark admitted that the case had been secretly reassigned to New Haven in June of that year, this time under the handpicked team of four retired detectives. According to Clark, no person is a suspect in this crime, and everyone is a suspect of this crime.
What that means? What
they don't know any like they know too much, or they don't know anything at all. I don't know.
What?
So, in December of 2012, a group of area residents presented the task force with another with potential evidence that Suzanne's killer might have been a former Yale graduate who, after telling friends that he was convinced he would be imminently arrested for murder, committed suicide. The task force declined to pursue this lead.
They were just like, no, thank you.
Yeah, they were like, ooh, evidence. No, thanks. We don't like evidence.
That's not what we do here at the police department.
Right. So these residents then filed a Freedom of Information request against New Haven and Yale, scheduled May 31st, 2013. The hearing was then postponed at the request of the city.
No! It's a conspiracy! It goes...
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Everyone knows.
My heart is beating so fast.
Ooh.
Everyone knows, but no one knows.
Everyone's a crime and no one's a crime.
Ooh.
Okay. November 2016, Two members of a television documentary team also petitioned the Connecticut Freedom of Information Commission for access to related law enforcement records. The matter was heard on April 17th, 2017, and a decision rendered on September 1st. September! They made these people wait months. It was denied.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yep.
Jesus.
The commission cited testimony of the assistant state's attorney, Marsha Pillsbury.
That's a fake name.
Yeah.
That's a fake name if I ever heard it.
She ain't real. That disclosure of the records would prejudice a prospective prosecution of Suzanne's killer, finding that a prospective law enforcement action is a reasonable possibility.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I copy and pasted it from Wikipedia.
Okay. That's a lot of words strung together.
Prospective law enforcement action is a reasonable possibility. So that makes it sound kind of like they have like a possible lead and that this documentary would possibly derail that.
Okay.
In reporting on this decision, the Hartford Courant, which is a news source, further elaborated that Suzanne's clothing would undergo touch DNA testing, that the FBI was re-involved, both new and prior witnesses were being interviewed, and a hypnotist is being brought in to interview key witnesses who may have seen her walking only minutes before she was murdered.
That's my fucking dream job.
Oh my God. So amazing.
I want to wear a trench coat. I want to have a reason to have a trench coat. I want to open it up and I want to have pocket watches on strings and I want to hypnotize people. That's all I want.
It's a very specific dream.
Yeah. It's mostly focused around the trench coat.
Right. So my last bullet point, on December 2nd, 2018, just prior to the 20th anniversary of the murder, Yale's former head investigator, Mr. Andy Rosenweig, Weig.
Wow.
Well,
what a name.
Finally broke his silence on the botched police investigation. And I quote, "When people are fed a steady stream of reports that the police already know who committed the crime and they'll be making an arrest soon, they tend to think that their information is unimportant and probably wrong. Sadly, we will probably never know how many such sources in the Jovan case never came forward. On December 27th, 2019, an attempt to force the state of Connecticut to finally make good on their decades-old promise to DNA test the evidence using modern technology and to shed more light on the running man person of interest."
The Calvin Klein model did it!
Yep.
Wow.
But that is all the information that I have for you today.
Okay, well, leaving a girl high and dry, all right, I get it. It's fine.
Yeah, really sorry about it.
It's okay.
All right.
Okay, what a murder that was.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Tell me a story.
I'm going to tell you a story, but my crime is not a murder.
Oh.
This is the story of the Antwerp diamond heist.
Ooh.
I said, I love a good heist.
You do.
It makes me feel very, did you say Swordfish with Halle Berry?
I mean, maybe in like 2008.
Oh God, it was the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life. All right, don't sue me, Halle Berry. But that's what heists remind me of. Like techie guys, like cracking. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So this has a lot of moving parts in it.
Okay.
So bear with me. I'm going to throw a lot of details at you.
All right. I'm ready.
Okay.
I need to get comfy.
So the Antwerp Diamond Heist took place the weekend of February 15th, 2003.
Okay.
The thieves made away with over, drumroll, $1 million in jewels, diamonds, gold, and other, you know, trinkets.
Miscellaneous,
highly valuable items.
Great, I love it.
Although arrests were made and time was served, most of these items remain uncovered to this day.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
They hit it well and they're like, yeah, man, I'll do my time. I'm going to go back for it.
Now you just hang in there.
Okay, I'm ready.
Let me read you the key players. We have Leonardo Notar Bartolo.
Wow.
I call him Leo.
Yeah,
he's Leo. He's the mastermind, the orchestrator, the grand schemer, the ringleader of the Italian group of thieves called La Scuola di Torino.
Leo is Robert De Niro.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes, for a visual.
Yeah, thank you.
The School of Turin is what that translates to. So we have Leo, the ringleader. We have Speedy. Speedy is, oh, just wait, there's nicknames galore.
All right, I can't
wait. Speedy is Leo's lifelong friend. They have been scheming and a plotting. They're very much like you and I if we had the tools to rob a diamond vault.
Which, let's be clear, we don't.
I have hardly enough wherewithal to get to work in the morning.
And we have, like, Frankensteined our podcast together at this point.
We're really working with the bare minimum here.
We're doing really good. So,
so
we cannot be stealing any diamonds.
No, thank you. Speedy, described as an anxious and paranoid man, lifelong friend, most likely the alias of Pietro Tavano. So Leo and Speedy. Then we have the monster, a tall, muscular man, an expert lockpicker, electrician, mechanic, and driver, was very strong. Most likely the alias of one Ferdinando Finotto.
I am picturing him as Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Ooh, yum.
I
pictured Jason Momoa.
Oh.
Mm. Yum. A lot more delicious.
Yeah,
okay.
Truly.
The genius, a specialist in alarm systems, most likely the alias of Elio Elio, uh-huh. An electronics expert known to be linked to another series of robberies. And the King of Keys. An older man, described as one of the best key forgers in the world. Did you know that was a job? I did not know.
I did not know.
His true identity remains unknown, and he is the only member of the crew to escape apprehension by the police.
Are they wizards? Does he have an invisibility cloak?
I'm not entirely convinced that these people are not magicians.
Okay.
So,
great.
Here's the where. 80% of the world's rough diamonds pass through the Antwerp Diamond Center. This three-square-block area is under 24-hour police surveillance.
Okay.
I couldn't get my mouth around that one.
Can we pause? Where's Antwerp?
Belgium.
Okay, cool.
Not Ohio.
I was going to say, we're real close to that.
No. Belgium. It is monitored by 63 video cameras around the clock. And about $3 billion worth of gem sales were reported in 2003. That's 1 year.
How many billion?
Three. $3 billion in 2003.
Made my throat dry.
But that does not include the hidden world of handshake deals and off-ledger transactions.
Oh, shit.
Business relationships follow the ancient family and religious traditions of the district's predominantly Jewish and Indian diamond dealers, known as Diamantiers. What a fucking word.
Oh my
God. It's yummy.
That is an entire, like, underground culture.
Of that we
have no idea about.
Oh, no.
I've never even heard of that.
No.
That's amazing. Okay. What? Say it again.
Diamantiers.
Diamantiers.
Feels good.
I just feel like I need to add it to my vocabulary.
Yeah. I want to call a wine that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So in 2000, the Belgian government realized it would require a special type of police force to keep an eye on the things and formed the Diamond Squad. That's right. The name.
So we've got Diamantiers and the Diamond Squad.
We're the Diamond Squad. You better not be up to any mischief here, boys.
They're like RoboCops. They've got like a Segway.
It sounds like a 1996 pop girls band.
Oh, yes.
We're the Diamond Squad.
With like razzle-dazzle belts.
Oh, my God.
A hair bedazzler.
Yep, and they have like a long sleeve baby doll with a spaghetti strap tank top on top of it with like a scarf.
Yep.
Yeah.
Chunky, chunky highlights.
Big ass headband.
Stick straight.
I love this. I'm picturing Hillary Duff Camp Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, Hillary Duff was in Camp Rock?
I don't know.
Demi Lovato was in Camp Rock.
Was she?
Yeah.
I thought it was Hillary Duff. I have Hillary Duff on the brain because I just watched an SVU episode where she killed her baby.
I am full on obsessed with Demi Lovato, so.
Okay, got it.
I can 100% tell you Demi was in Camp Rock, but I have not actually watched it to tell you whether or not Hillary is there too.
I have no emotions towards Hillary Duff whatsoever.
I love and respect her as a human. I think she's great. She just put a kibosh on Lizzie McGuire.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, because Disney Plus wouldn't greenlight it if it was not under PG-13.
Oh.
And Hillary Duff was like, yeah, but she's in her 30s now. Like, she cannot be living under a PG-13 ceiling. She needs room to grow. She's an adult. And so there's like a whole
rigmarole
fandom that is begging Hulu to greenlight it instead.
Oh, for the love of God.
If we get a not rated Lizzie McGuire, I just got full body chills. My childhood is ready.
I have no feelings about this either. Okay.
Well, now you know.
Okay. Excellent. Why are we talking about Lizzie? Oh, okay. Let me tell you about the vault that the diamonds are kept in.
Welcome to A Little Bit Grim, where we get so sidetracked. Oh, we didn't introduce ourselves.
Oh my gosh.
Shit.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Taylor. So sorry.
We're bad at this.
Maybe, well, I don't know.
I'm going to tell you about the
vault. You guys are just going to have to figure it out, I think.
Sorry about you. Love you. Okay. So the vault that housed the diamonds and safety lock boxes is situated two floors below the main floor. It was protected by multiple security mechanisms, as you would if you have billions of dollars worth of diamonds in one singular room, including a lock with 100 million possible combinations, infrared heat detectors, a seismic sensor, Doppler radar, and a magnetic field.
Like Doppler radar, like they're trying to predict the weather on this underground thing?
There's a tornado stealing diamonds.
Got it.
Love that.
Cool.
The building itself has its own private security force. So let me tell you about the setup. This robbery took 18 months of preparation. Our old boy Leo rented an apartment in the Antwerp World Diamond Center for 25,000 Belgian francs, which is $700 US.
Thank you.
This is actually a robbery technique first pioneered in New York by Mr. Stan, a.k.a. Vojislav Stanimirovic, who is a diamond thief in and of his own right. So by him renting an apartment, it created access to the safe deposit box located in the vault two stories beneath the building. It also gave him a tenant ID card so he could have 24-hour access to the building. And while he lived there for the 18 months, he posed as an Italian diamond merchant in order to gain credibility and be a familiar face with the security guards going down to his lockbox and, like, getting his diamonds.
They're in it for the long haul.
The long haul. Well, it's $100 million. Like, you can...
Man, they, like, cracked the scheme when they were, like, 15 years old.
He frequented pawn shops there and sold diamonds that he stole from back home in Italy. He had been a thief his entire life, starting at the age of 8.
Wow.
When he robbed the milkman.
Oh, little baby Aladdin.
Oh, this is not that wholesome, though.
Okay.
Street rat. Okay. So this is where it gets wild. This is the how. The team, the boys, the gang, used camera pens in 2003. So this is like some real James Bond shit.
I'm so in love with this right now. Mm-hmm.
They used camera pens to covertly photograph details of the vault when Leo would go inside and, you know, be chummy with the guards.
Snakes.
Due to his frequent trips to pawn shops, he became a familiar face. The security got used to seeing him, got a little lax around him. However, lax a security team for a $1 billion diamond industry can be.
Okay.
So somehow they managed to hide a small camera above the vault door in such a way that it was invisible to see while the lights were on. It recorded combination patterns entered by the guards into the lock that had 100 million possible combinations. Okay. So it recorded those patterns and it broadcasted the data to a sensor that they hid in a watertight hidden chamber that housed electronics to receive the camera's data. Guess where they hid this?
Tell me where.
In the freaking fire extinguisher in the hallway.
What? I mean, you and I both know that those don't get...
Once a year.
Evaluated as much as they probably should.
No, annually.
Once a year, maybe.
Allen County requires annually.
I don't look at mine annually, I'm going to tell you that.
Well.
But that's my, like, whole
We one. Contract that out.
See, that's why we don't have fireplaces.
Oh. But you have stoves. I've never had a fire from a fireplace. I have fires from stoves.
Yeah, like my fire.
From your laundry basket.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway.
Should have had a fire extinguisher.
See?
Okay.
Get anyway, like Leo.
So it's in the fire extinguisher. They've hidden this thingamajig that is gathering all of the data they need.
From the camera that they hid in the light, so it's invisible while the lights are on.
Okay.
Okay. They had a full-scale replica of the vault provided to them.
Ocean's 11 style.
By a diamond trader insider. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit. There were claims later on that all of this was an insurance scam. Leo said that this was an inside job that they were hired to do for insurance money. However, due to security issues with the vault system, they had a very low insurance payout, like $1 million if they lost anything. And they lost $100 million. So police think that lie detectors determined that was a lie. They just, whatever. Anyway, so they're practicing in the full-scale replica that they had created by a diamond, quote-unquote, insider.
Those are some very heavy finger quotes.
Oh, yeah. You can't see that, but I did air quotes.
Very heavy.
Very. So the day before the robbery happened, this is on a Friday, Leo went into the vault as he normally does. But while inside, he sprayed hairspray on the thermal motion sensor after practicing the sleight of hand required to spray it without anybody noticing. The oil in the hairspray is invisible to the naked eye, and it insulated the sensors from thermal fluctuations in the room so they wouldn't be able to detect any activity. They used this as a temporary measure until they were able to get inside and properly disable the sensor system.
What?
Right.
I cannot fathom how fast he would have had to have been.
So, you know, he was just like in his apartment all day, just pulling out a can of hairspray, like a can of Tresemme, like a gun in a Western movie. Like,
so fast.
Love that so much. Okay. So Leo stayed in a car during the robbery, listening to a police scanner, and was prepared to leave as soon as the group was done. So like he did like the setup. But he never actually went in and stole the diamonds. Oh, he just, like, helped other people do it.
I can see Robert De Niro right now sitting in a car listening to a police scanner like,
He's a good mastermind.
He is.
Mm-hmm. The team wore plastic gloves to avoid leaving fingerprints, which I feel like, duh.
Right.
To avoid the large number of security cameras in the area around the bank, the King of Keys picked the lock to an abandoned office building that was adjoined to the Diamond Center and shared a private garden with the Diamond Center that was not under video surveillance.
Can you imagine having that much knowledge? Like, just laying in bed at night being like, I can get into any building ever just because I want to.
Don't. I would be drunk with power.
I would be too. I don't know how.
I would break into everything.
And I also would not be as humble as this guy is. Like, y'all would know my fucking name.
Yeah. I can pick any lock.
Right.
I love that. We need attention. Okay, so the garden allowed access to a small balcony in the center, which the group accessed via a ladder. An infrared sensor monitored the terrace, but the genius used a large homemade polyester shield to hide his thermal signature as he approached the sensor, and he placed the shield in front of it, preventing it from detecting the rest of the group that followed him up. He then later disabled the alarm on the balcony's window.
Okay.
Security cameras in the antechamber were covered with black plastic bags to allow the group to turn on the lights. Think that Nicolas Cage America movie.
Oh, National Treasure.
Yeah, we're going to steal the Declaration of Independence. Like that, where they,
so much.
Me too. That's all I could picture when I was reading this.
Oh, it's so good.
The lemon juice on the back.
Oh, it's so highly underrated. It's a really good workout movie, too. I watched it while I was on the elliptical, and, like...
I'm sorry. I'm very busy trying not to die when I work out.
No, you just take your phone, you hook it up to the Netflix, and you just go.
I can't.
Yeah, you can.
No, I have to really focus on breathing.
Okay. Next time.
Okay. So, the vault door... This is tricky. I had to read this 6 times to understand what was going on, because I didn't go to college for diamond robbery. The vault door had a magnetic lock on it that consisted of 2 plates.
Okay.
When armed, the 2 plates made a magnetic field, and when the door opened, the field would break,
uh-huh.
and that would trigger an alarm.
Okay.
Okay. So the genius, again, coming in clutch, used a custom-made aluminum plate to which he attached heavy-duty double-sided tape to one side. He stuck the plate onto the two bolts and unscrewed them. While they were loose from their proper position, they were still side by side and generating that magnetic field.
Okay.
And they pivoted out of the way and he taped them to a fucking wall.
He was like, goodbye.
Goodbye.
You now live here.
Yeah.
And also, I have now figured out who the genius is in the celebrity world. He is Mark Ruffalo, also known as Bruce Banner.
Oh, he is
cute with glasses.
The nerdy boys don't get enough love. He's so smoking hot.
Yeah.
I'm into him.
Oh, absolutely. Okay.
Continue. What's the green superhero that he is?
The Hulk.
Okay, got it.
But that's Bruce Banner. Like, Bruce Banner is his human form of the Hulk.
I thought that was Batman. Who's Batman?
Not Bruce Banner.
Cool. Shit,
what's his name?
I don't know.
Bruce Wayne.
So many Bruces.
I was like, my husband will actually disown me. He will lock me out of my house if I can't answer this question right now.
Ryan, get her. Okay. So, the King of Keys, which, can we stop? What a badass name.
I'm having a really hard time not picturing Hagrid, Keeper of the Keys.
See,
wrong.
I picture Aladdin's dad, King of Thieves.
Oh, he was hot.
They both were smoking hot, like
not
father-son
cool.
duo.
Not cool. Woo. Don't fuck with 10-year-old Taylor like that.
Listen, Aladdin was my sexual awakening, and I will not shy away from that fact.
Dimitri from Anastasia. And I am...
Honestly, Anastasia.
Oh, yeah. A little bit ashamed, kind of, but not enough to not tell you this. The cartoon Fox Robin Hood, his voice.
Listen, he was a little thicky.
Whew.
That little fox.
Woohoo,
buddy.
Man, every time.
Mm-hmm.
Continue.
Okay. The King of Keys used video footage that they took from their camera pens to make a dupe of the impossible to replicate 2-foot-long vault key that is impossible to duplicate.
Oh, okay. But the King of Keys has it.
Boy, he's the King of Keys. They don't call him the King of Keys for not being able to be the King of Keys.
Okay, so I'm having a really hard time now that he is my only cartoon character.
I'll carry on.
Okay.
Okay, so he brought this fake key with him, but during the robbery, he just had like a stroke of genius, and he recalled that the guards would frequently visit the utility room before entering the vault, so he decided to just like pop his head in and take a look, and he found the fucking real key. So he used the real key to open the door, and he decided, well, why not steal it? So the manufacturers still thought that this type of key was still impossible to duplicate.
Well, not if you have the original in front of your face,
He left it. They left it.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't actually revealed that the key was duplicated until Leo told police after his capture. Right. So the team turned off the lights in the room before opening the vault to keep from tripping the light sensors. Next, the monster, working in total darkness, pitch black, 2 stories under the ground darkness, moved to the middle of the room because it has, like, seismic sensors. So if he stepped out of place, think of, like, the lasers that you have to, like, obstacle your way through. He did this in total darkness, having practiced the number of steps in the replica. And he pushed back one of 100 ceiling tiles to reveal the hardwired security system. He then...
I'm sorry. My mind is literally like shattering into a million pieces.
It's wild.
Right,
it's wild.
Okay. All right.
An electric pulse shot along these wires, and if any sensor was tripped or broken, the circuit would break and trigger the alarm. So he stripped the wire's plastic coating and attached a piece of new wire to the exposed copper, effectively rerouting the circuit so the system couldn't trigger any alarms. Heat sensors were blinded by styrofoam boxes and light sensors with tape. The Scooby Squad worked in total darkness, having memorized the layout of the vault. They would occasionally flick on the lights for a brief moment in order to position their drill over the lock boxes.
But
he rerouted the circuit system. So even if they triggered an alarm, it wouldn't sound because he rewired it. That's
and
why
the cameras don't see the lights going on
because
they black spray.
No, that's the thermal sensor.
Right.
The light sensors don't work because they put black bags over it.
Right, okay.
So, the King of Keys used a hand-cranked drill to break the locks on each of the security boxes, and the contents were then emptied into duffel bags. At 5:30 a.m., they finished and left, returning to the office building, a process that took almost an hour due to the need for caution, because, you know, they have $100 million worth of diamonds and shit. They put the bags into Leo's car and then drove to the apartment while the rest of the men went back on foot. So, kind of shitty call.
Yeah.
Like, you're just going to, like, drive back and, like, make your phone. Like, call them an Uber. Do something.
Truly. Okay. Yeah, okay.
So, after they got back to the apartment, as if they didn't, like, get their fill of thievery, they stole the entirety of the security footage. And more than 123 out of 160 safety deposit boxes were forced open, each of which was made of steel and copper and had both a key lock and combination lock.
Oh, my God.
Right.
So, like, okay. So, I know, like, security lock boxes here are used for, like, birth certificates, passports, like, important documents, and also, like, maybe, like, family jewels and stuff. But were all of these, like, family jewel, like, jewels and stuff, like, there were...
So, these are diamonds that are on, like, the market.
Okay.
So, they're... and I was reading, I didn't put it in the notes because it was, like, convoluted enough, but, okay, like, diamonds that they mine, like, rough, uncut diamonds, come to the market to be assessed and also refined or whatever they do to diamonds. So, the diamonds, it was something like 95% of all the diamonds in the world have passed through the Antwerp Diamond Center. It's like a processing plant. That's its own city. Think of the Vatican, but for diamonds.
I have full-on body goosebumps because I get nervous when there's that much money. Like, we have to, like, in our job, like, we have to check people's income to make sure that they qualify. And I would, like, break out. Like, when I'm nervous, my chest gets really red. Like, I would see a number and my chest would get red and I would, like, giggle uncontrollably.
Like,
and
you make a lot of money.
Leasing agent would be like, bitch, get yourself under control. But I was like, you don't understand, you're bougie too. Like, this person makes $1 million.
Right.
I was like, I can't fathom. So it makes me very uncomfortable and it makes me nervous laugh. Sorry.
It's a lot of money. Okay.
I grew up poor.
So here is where things kind of all go south. This would have been the perfect crime
if
it were not for one panic attack.
Oh, no.
Leo and Speedy,
Leo?
Two best friends.
Okay. All right.
We're driving along with the stolen evidence that they were supposed to burn and some of the duffel bags of diamonds and jewels and gold and blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
The rest of the guys all had their own set of the duffel bags. They divided it up.
Okay.
And they all had a rendezvous point just outside of Milan.
Okay.
While they're driving along, Speedy starts to get really nervous. He starts to get really shaky. You know, like he's on speed.
Sorry.
Thank you. That made me feel better.
You're about to, like, prepare your own stupid laugh, but I gave it to you because
you hand delivered
it. As a human.
Thank you. This is, I'd be lost without you. Okay, so the rest of the Rat Pack are getting ready, are at or are about to get to the rendezvous point just outside of Milan. From the beginning, the rest of the crew were against Speedy being involved. They thought he couldn't handle the pressure. He was a little wishy-washy. They just didn't think he was trustworthy. And boy, were they fucking right.
Oh, no.
So,
poor Speedy.
He's panicking. He tells Leo to pull over. He's getting out. He can't breathe. He's, like, vomiting. He's doing all of the classic panic attack things that, you know, we're really familiar with. He starts throwing the evidence out the car, emptying out the duffel bags, throwing diamonds everywhere, throwing the videotape evidence, throwing trash, everything in the car.
Speedy.
Speedy, chill. Go slowy.
Oh, no.
I needed that to come out of my mouth. I'm sorry. I had a thought. I couldn't stop it.
I know.
Okay. So Leo, being his best friend, really talks him down. He's like, I've let you spiral enough.
Yeah, to quote a good friend.
Yeah, to quote Taylor about an hour ago.
I have let you spiral enough.
Let's pull it together. And so Leo starts throwing all the stuff back into the duffel bag, all the valuables, back into a duffel bag, back into the car. They are in the middle of buttfuck nowhere Belgium.
Oh, no.
And there's just, like, all of the evidence that they were supposed to burn.
in the country land.
They just left in the country land, which is fine because it's the fucking country land, Belgium mountain wood patch.
Nowhere.
Nowhere. Middle of nowhere. And would have been fine if.
If.
This particular patch of land did not belong to a Belgium hermit. Who was having a feud with a couple local teenagers, as in, like, two guys who live, like, an hour and a half away.
Oh.
That would, like, come to his land and, like, hunt mushrooms or whatever.
Right.
Right. So.
They're playing fetch with their dog.
Yeah. So he called the police because they littered on his land. And when the police got there, they saw envelopes that had the Antwerp Diamond Center on it. And they found dozens of small uncut diamonds and half of a sandwich. And they matched that sandwich to a receipt that Leo had for a sandwich. DNA matched. And the jig was up, bud. So.
Oh, so Speedy was, like, not only throwing, like, evidence out that they could, like, give them away. He was, like, literally throwing diamonds out the window.
He emptied the duffel bags out into the middle of the woods. And Leo, like, talked him down. And then they gathered all the valuables back up and put him back in the car and drove away. Except they left the envelopes, raw diamonds, and half of a what I presume is a tuna salad sandwich.
I had it pictured as a ham and cheese sandwich. Oh, okay. Either way.
Well, we all have different narratives.
Yep.
So the jig was up.
Picturing many celebrities here that aren't here, so that's just how my mind works.
Leo was sentenced to 10 years in jail. All the rest were sentenced to 5, except for the King of Keys, who was never brought to justice.
Wait, so, like, the rest of the guys, like, didn't rat that guy out, or they didn't know who he was?
They didn't rat, none of them ratted any of the other ones out. The police were just able to put it together.
Wow.
Right. So, Leo did not speak to reporters, to police, to anybody for nearly 7 years.
Oh my goodness.
Then he gave one report, which the majority of which I have put into this.
Sure.
And they released him in, like, 2007, 2008.
Remind me when this took place. Like, when was
2003.
This? Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So he broke his parole and he returned to prison until 2017.
Do you know how he broke his parole?
What doing some steal? Right, doing some dumb shit. I think he broke his parole by, like, leaving town.
Oh my God.
But the dumbest.
Bro. So,
but he went back to prison, finished out his time, finished in 2017. And I would like to think that Leo met up with the King of Keys in Aruba.
Yeah.
And they finally had the financial freedom to live out a secret toward love affair together. And now they drink Mai Tais and make love during the sunrise in a seaside shanty town. But they probably aren't. They probably just have a lot of diamonds somewhere.
Wow. So the rest of the diamonds were never recovered.
The majority, like 90% of the diamonds, were never found.
I'm mind boggled.
Like, what do you do with black market diamonds?
How many people do you think know this story who have gone to Belgium and been like, we're going to find the most ass-backward, nowhere place ever, and we're just going to dig around?
You better be careful. Apparently there's Belgium hermits hunting mushrooms out in the wild.
I mean.
Wearing fox hats all.
Whoa.
What's that? Danny Boone? What's that dude's name?
Paul Bunyan? No.
No.
Wrong. Taylor, edit that out.
We don't know how to edit.
I know. I'm going to figure it out before this comes out.
Maybe by the next episode, we'll be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
But probably not. Don't hold your breath.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that was mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you did an art heist.
It was pretty fun.
Oh, or not an art heist. Diamond heist. That's crazy. I can't, like, I just keep picturing, like, all of the shit that I saw in Ocean's 11, which wasn't even a quarter of the stuff that these guys actually did and kind of got away with it.
If it weren't for Speedy and his Speedy Gonzalez ways.
Poor Speedy.
Bless him. Give him an Ativan.
Yeah, and, like, when you were telling me about how he's going to have a panic attack, and I was like, oh, it was probably, like, before antidepressants. No, bitch!
No!
You could have had something! You could have been medicated!
Your life could have been made.
What? Oh, my goodness. That would be me if I wasn't on my Wellbutrin, though. I'd be, like, throwing shit out the windows, like...
We gotta go!
Get back here! Oh my anyway, gosh.
Well, wow. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much. And go follow us on all the places.
Instagram,
Twitter, Facebook. We do have a Facebook group.
We do have a Facebook group. We made one. We said we were on the fence about it last time, but we did it.
Yeah, we did it. It is
a little bit grim.
Podcast, right? A Little Bit Grim podcast?
Sure, yes.
On Facebook? Okay, yeah. I mean, just search it. You'll find it.
Yeah.
Come join us. It's a bunch of other people like you if you're interested in hearing this. These tales of...
It's a bunch of other creeps. You'll fit right in.
Yeah. I mean, we're just going to, like, go all out. Everybody's going to fit in. So far, it's been great. But thank you for supporting us. We really like you a lot.
Yeah, we love you a lot. All right. I love you, Tay.
I love you.
Yeah.
My heart is so full. All right. So we're going to see you on the next. And I think next up is cryptids. Or no, folklore. Folklore as a general umbrella.
It's a broad one, but it's going to be good.
I'm really excited.
Okay. All right.
Bye.